The man fired, the muzzle blast stabbing the darkness with a lance of flame. The bullet slammed into the building a foot above Smoke's head. Smoke's slug doubled the man over. A rifle shot from across the street sent a bullet speeding past Smoke's head. Smoke flattened on the ground and rolled under the building, hoping a rattlesnake was not under there and irritated at being disturbed. Lamps were turning up in every home and business of the settlement.
God damn it, Jesse! You done shot me!
Smoke rolled out from under the building just as Mills and his men came running out from the saloon in various stages of undress. Mills had jerked on his high-top boots, not laced up, and put on his hat. Other than that, he wore only his long handles.
Bring a lamp over here. One's down in the alley.
Here's a lamp. Hey, that's Don King. Rides for Lonnie Childs.
He doesn't anymore. The town got an undertaker?
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Smoke. Me! Free haircut for the deceased, too. No customer complaints so far.
Stretch him out in your place, then. It's cool enough, so it'll keep for a day. Mills and I will take a ride out to break the sad news to Luddy Charles first thing in the morning.
They left before dawn and were on 7th Slash Range as the sun was chasing away the last of the shadows of night. They stopped at a wooden hand-painted sign nailed to a tree.
Trespassers will be shot. Certainly gives a person a warm feeling of being wanted, doesn't it? Let me just shift my badge to the front of my coat so they'll be sure to see it.
Makes a dandy target. Might stop a bullet if it was fired from far enough distance.
You're so full of good cheer early in the morning.
Thank you.
Just hold it right there, boys. And keep them hands in sight. I'm right behind you.
I am a United States Marshal, and this is Deputy Jensen. I have 6 of my men 15 minutes behind us. Cease and desist and come forward.
Do what?
Get your butt around here so we can see you.
I don't take orders from you.
You think you can get both of us?
You just sit your saddles.
Jake the foreman worked his way in front of Smoke and Mills.
If you ever put iron on me again, I'll kill you. Now put that rifle away.
Just pointing that weapon at me could mean prison for you.
I'm just following orders from the boss. Now what do you want here?
To see your boss.
Well, he likes to work at night and he ain't up yet. He don't get up till 8.
Is that right?
Luddy Charles was having himself one sweet little dream.
Rise and shine.
What? Smoke marched into Luddy's bedroom, grabbed him by the ankle, and dragged him out of bed. Luddy came up in his long john, swinging both fists.
Jesus Christ! What the hell's going on here?
Smoke staggered him with one punch. Then he grabbed him by the neck and the back flap of his long johns, hauled him out the bedroom door, threw him down the stairs in the two-story ranch house. Mills stood next to Smoke at the top of the stairs, staring down at the human heap lying below him.
Your approach to law and order is quite novel, to say the least.
It gets their attention.
Smoke and Mills walked down the stairs to stand over a dazed and befuddled Luddy. Smoke tossed Don King's personal effects to the floor.
Those belonged in one of your hands. He tried to kill me last night. Somebody named Jesse shot him after I did. Get Jesse out here and do it now.
No one named Jesse works for me.
Smoke drew, cocked, and fired so fast it was a blur. He put a slug between Luddy's bare feet.
I said, get Jesse here.
Jesus Christ! Jake!
Yeah?
Go get Jesse in here.
Okay.
I hate you, Jensen.
I'm all broken up about it. Aren't you going to be neighborly and offer us some coffee?
All to hell with you!
Disgusting lack of hospitality.
Hell with you, too!
Jesse didn't come back last night. His bunk ain't been slept in.
We have a description of him. I'll get a federal warrant issued for his arrest, charging him with murder and attempted murder of a law officer.
Now both of you get the hell out of my house!
Smoke looked at Luddy's now soiled long handles.
You need to do something about your personal hygiene, Luddy.
Get out of here!
What do you want done with the remains of Don King?
Bury him!
He didn't have but $2 on him. A good box costs far more than that. I personally would suggest one lined with a subtle shade of cloth, perhaps with a soft pillow on which to lay his poor, dead head. A simple service will suffice, with the minister reading from the—
God damn it, I don't care if you read from a tobacco sack! Just get out of my house and put the man in the ground. Send me the bill.
You're a true lover of your fellow man, Luddy.
I'm sure the service will be tomorrow. Shall I tell everyone you'll be in attendance?
Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out!
Think we have overstayed our welcome. Do you agree, Marshal?
Quite. Shall we take our leave?
Oh, let's do.
The next several days were long and boring. And if Jake had been telling the truth back at the ranch house, Jesse had left the county, probably for fear that Luddy would shoot him for not shooting Smoke. Shortly after the stage had run, Mills came to the marshal's office, smiling and waving a piece of paper.
This is it, Smoke. It seems that Lee Slater, and Slater is his Christian name, was born in Oklahoma. He left the farm when he was about 15 after raping and killing a neighbor girl. He had a younger brother that disappeared shortly after robbing a stagecoach and making off with a strongbox filled with thousands of dollars. The boys were named Lee and Luther. Luther's middle name was Charles.
It's good enough for me, but I doubt a jury would convict on it.
Nor do I. My superiors have given me orders to stay out here until Lee Slater and his band of thugs are contained. But at the rate things are going, I may as well move my belongings out here and transfer my bank account.
Oh, come on. I bet if you stay out here a few more months, Mills, this country will grab you. Then you won't want to leave.
Do you have any sort of plan, Smoke? Because I seem to be fresh out.
No, I don't, Mills. It seems to me that all we can do is wait for something to break, then jump on it like a hound on a bone.
Mills had noticed that Smoke had adopted a small cur dog he'd found wandering around the town and eating scraps. Smoke had bathed the little dog and fixed it a bed in the office. The dog now lay in Smoke's lap, contented as Smoke gently petted it.
You're a strange man, Smoke. You don't appear to care one whit about the life of a person gone wrong, yet you love dumb animals.
Animals can't help being what they are, Mills. We humans can. We have the ability to think and reason. We don't have to rob and steal and lie and cheat and murder. God gave us a brain, and I don't have any use for people who refuse to use that brain and turn to a life of crime. You read the Bible, Mills?
Well, certainly. But what has the Bible got to do with animals?
A lot. I think animals go to heaven.
Oh, come now.
Sure. And our Bible is not the only good book that talks of that. Our Bible says in Ecclesiastes, "For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beasts, for all is vanity." Paul preached about it too. And my wife, who was a lot more religious than me, says that John Wesley came right out and outlined what he thought animals would experience in heaven. John Calvin also admitted that he thought animals were to be renewed.
You never cease to baffle me, Smoke. You're a walking contradiction. You mentioned some other good book. What are you talking about?
The Quran. You haven't read it?
Good God, no. And you have?
Oh, yeah. Sally ordered a copy for me. I found it very interesting.
You think you'll go to heaven, Smoke?
I don't know. God loves his warriors. I do know that. I'd like to think that maybe there's a middle ground for men like me.
Like Valhalla?
Yeah.
Another personal question, Smoke.
Sure.
How many men have you killed?
I honestly don't know, Mills. Over 100, surely. Possibly 200. I got a lot of blood on my hands. I won't deny that. Jesse James gave me my first pistol, way back during the war, when I was just a kid in Missouri. A Navy 36 it was. I carried that old pistol for a long time and put some men in the ground with it.
What happened to it?
I think it's in a trunk up at the ranch house.
You have children, Smoke?
Oh, yeah. They're in France with their grandparents, traveling and getting an education. Baby Arthur had to go for medical treatment. You married, Mills?
No. I haven't found the right woman yet, I suppose. But I'm still looking.
I hope you find you a good woman, Mills. There's one out there. Just keep looking.
About half a dozen men riding in, Marshal Mills. They look like thugs to me.
Smoke put the little dog in its bed and walked to the open door. Deke Carey and Dirty Jackson were among the six men. Smoke had seen pictures of Deke, and he'd had a run-in with Dirty some years back when both had been much younger.
You know them?
I know them.
Smoke slipped the leather thongs off the hammers of his 44s.
It's come to that?
It's come to that.
Why not just arrest them?
On what charge? There aren't any warrants out on them that I'm aware of.
Then we have no right to interfere with their freedom of travel.
Deke there, he's a back shooter, a thief, and a child molester. Dirty's done it all. Cold-blooded murder, rape, robbery, torture, kidnapping. I told him years ago that if I ever laid eyes on him again, I'd kill him. And that's exactly what I intend to do. Now, Mills, you and I have become friends over the past week or so. But this is personal, between Dirty and me. He killed a little girl in Nevada some years back. He bragged about doing it, then left town just ahead of the posse. He's fixing to come to trial over that killing, right now.
But you can't just...
Mills, lead, follow, or get the hell out of my way.
Smoke stepped off the boardwalk just as the outlaws were entering the saloon. Mills followed him. Seconds later, the saloon emptied of locals.
Barkeep, give us a room for the night.
Not in this town, Dirty. The only room you're gonna get is a pine box. And if there aren't enough coins in your pocket to buy a box, we'll roll you up in your blankets and plant you that way.
Dirty turned and faced Jensen. The man was, in fact, downright dirty. And big and mean-looking besides. He wore one gun tied down and had another six-shooter shoved behind his belt.
You got no call to talk to me like that, Jensen.
You ever ridden back to Nevada to put flowers on the grave of that little girl you killed, Dirty?
I was drunk when that happened, Jensen. Man can't be held responsible for what he does when he's drunk.
Uh-huh. Well, the courts might hold that to be true one of these days. But one of these days don't count right now. Give him a drink, barkeep. On me. Enjoy it, Dirty. It's gonna be your last one.
You son of a...
Stand still, Deke. You move again, and I'll put lead in you.
You think you can take us all, Jensen?
Oh, yeah.
Mills had moved to one side of the room, one thumb hooked over his belt buckle. Smoke had noticed several days before that the federal marshal carried a hideout gun shoved behind his belt under his jacket. Punk sneered at Mills.
Who's your funny-looking friend, Jensen?
I am United States Marshal Walsdorf.
Well, la-ti-da. A United States Marshal. Heavens, oh, I'm so fearful I might just swoon.
Mills was across the room before the young man could blink. He hit that smart-mouthed punk with a hard right fist that knocked him sprawling. Then he jerked him up, popped him again, and threw him across the room. Punk landed against the cold pot-bellied stove. The stove fell over. The stovepipe broke loose from the flue collar. Two-bit young Gunny was covered with soot.
Show some respect for the badge, if not for me.
I can't say nothing. Help!
Let's take him, Greeny.
Smoke was already moving. He reached Dirty before the man could drag iron, and he loosened some of Dirty's teeth with a short, hard right. Greeny swung at Mills and almost fell down as Mills ducked the punch. Mills planted his lace-up boots and decked the outlaw. Smoke jabbed a left fist into Deke's face several times, the jabs jarring the man's head back and bringing a bright smear of blood to his mouth. He followed the jabs with a right cross and knocked Deke to the floor.
By the Lord, this is exhilarating!
Soot-faced punk hit Mills on the top of the head with the stovepipe, and he knocked him spinning across the room. Smoke splintered a chair across the punk's teeth, the hardwood knocking the kid up against the wall.
God damn it now!
Deke was just getting to his boots when the barkeep hopped up on the bar and jumped on the Deke's back. Deke threw the smaller man off. He came in swinging at Smoke. Smoke hit him with a left-right combination that glazed the man's bloodshot eyes and backed him up against the bar. Smoke hit him twice more in the stomach, and that did it for Deke. Kissed the floor. Dirty hit Smoke a sneak punch that jarred Smoke and knocked him around. Smoke recovered and the men stood toe-to-toe and slugged it out. Meanwhile, Mills was smashing Greeny's face with short, hard, brutal blows that brought a spray of blood every time his big fist impacted with the outlaw. The soot-covered kid climbed to his boots and decided to take on the barkeep. Bad mistake on the kid's part because the barman had just pulled out a truncheon, which he promptly and with much enthusiasm laid on top of the punk's head. Those punk's eyes crossed and he hit the floor, out cold. Dirty had backed up, and with Smoke's hands still balled into fists, he grinned at him and went for his gun. Smoke kicked the man in the groin, and Dirty doubled over. Smoke stepped forward and kicked the murderer in the face with the toe of his boot. Dirty's teeth bounced all around the floor. He rolled away, blood dripping from his ruined mouth. Deep grabbed for his guns, and Smoke shot him twice in the belly. Somehow, Deke still found the strength to lift his pistol. Smoke put a slug in the center of the man's forehead. Dirty rolled to his boots and faced Smoke, a gun in each hand, his face a bloody mask of hate. Smoke was cocking and firing so fast it was a blur. Dirty's guns fell out of numbed fingers. He clung to the edge of the bar.
What's the matter with him? Why don't he say something?
Because he's dead. Give him a poke.
I'm happy to oblige.
The barkeep nudged Dirty with an outstretched index finger.
Yep, you's right.
Greeny was crawling around on the floor. The punk was beginning to show some signs of life. The other two had wisely decided to stay on the floor with their hands in plain sight.
You others get up and haul the kid and the jerk over there to their boots. The punk goes to jail. The others get chained to that tree by the side of the office.
Hey, that ain't right. What happens if it rains?
I'll give you a bar of soap.
The next day, Mills was dabbing horse liniment on his jaw bruise in Smoke's office, surrounded by the other marshals.
How come we always miss all of the fun, Mills?
Oh, Albert. You know, Smoke, you really can't keep those men chained up to that tree.
Why is that, Hugh?
Because they're human beings, and as such have basic rights accorded to them by the Constitution.
Greeny didn't think much of the rights of those people he killed up in Canada, Hugh. Liebert didn't give a damn for the rights of those women he kidnapped and raped. Augie didn't have anybody's rights in mind when he tortured a man to death.
Smoke held up several wire replies.
It's all right there. Deputies will be coming for Liebert and Augie. Royal Canadian Mounted Police will be here for Greeny. And I'm gonna hang the punk back yonder in the cell.
Oh, I ain't done nothing. You ain't gonna hang me.
Oh, yes I am, kid. I say you were the one who killed that poor man back up the trail. I say you were the one who raped and killed those poor little girls. And that's what I got you charged with. You're gonna hang, punk!
Well, you can't possibly stand here and tell me that...
Smoke held up his hand and winced and hushed. The cell area was behind and to the right of the main office, and the kid couldn't see what was going on, only hear exactly how Smoke had planned it.
You ever seen a hanging, kid?
No.
Ain't gonna be no hanging!
It's a sight to behold, boy. Sometimes the neck don't break, and the victim just dangles there while he chokes to death. Eyes bug out, tongue pooches out, turns black.
Shut the hell up!
Fella just twists there in the breeze. Sometimes it takes, 5 minutes for him to die.
God damn, you Jensen!
Awfully ugly sight to see. Plumb disgusting. And smelly, too. Victims usually lose all control of himself.
Shut up!
Terrible sight to see. Just awful. Sometimes they put a hood on the victim. I'll be sure and request one for him. When they take that hood off once the man's dead, his face is all swole up and black as a piece of coal.
Jensen?
What do you want, kid?
I make a deal with you.
What kind of deal, kid?
Oh, I know lots of things.
What kind of things?
Oh, we got a deal first.
Now, you don't have much of a position to deal from, boy. Your trial is coming up in a few days. The jury's already picked, and they're eager to convict. Folks around here haven't seen a good hanging in a year or more. Going to be dinner on the grounds the day you swing. Did you hear that hammering a while ago?
Yeah.
That was the fellas building a gallows, boy. That's where you're going to swing.
I told you, I'd deal.
Start dealing, boy. You don't have long.
Hey, don't let Greeny and Liebert and Augie know nothing about this, Marshal.
You have my word on that.
I'm ready when you are.
He's all yours, Mills. You wanted it legal? You got it legal. This time.
Needless to say, we won't tell the kid that hammering and sawing was a man building a new outhouse.
Right. He might not see the humor in that.
Uh-huh. Get your pad and pen, Winston. Let's see what the kid has to say.
In exchange for escaping the hangman's noose and that short drought that culminated in an abrupt and fatal halt, the kid, his name was Walter Parsons, had quite a lot to say.
I don't know nothing about Lee Slater and Luddy Charles being related, but they was close friends, or so Lee said. His gang is hiding out on Seven Slash Range, east of the ranch house and south of the Alamosa River. In a wild country. They's planning to rob the miners and the stages carrying gold and silver, and Luddy's going to handle the getting rid of the boodle end of it.
How many in the gang?
I reckon there's about 50 or 60. I don't rightly know since they wasn't camped all together, but it was a big gang.
How many people have you robbed and raped and murdered?
Bunches. Used to be fun, but now it's sort of boring. All them people did was blubber and slobber and beg and cry and carrying on something awful. It was a relief just to shoot them in the head to shut them up.
By the time the questioning was over, Mills was red as a beet, and Winston was somewhat green. They stepped out of the marshal's office for some fresh air.
Disgusting. I have never in my life heard of such depravity as that which came out of Parsons' mouth.
What are you going to do with the kid?
I don't know. I can't allow the return of that vicious little thug back to a free society. That would be a grave injustice. The judge is going to have to decide that issue.
Parsons' never going to change.
I know that. It's a dreadful time we live in, Smoke.
It's going to get worse, Mills. Count on it. Now then, what about Luddy?
We can't move against him on just the word of a common hoodlum. We've got to have some proof that he is indeed a part of this conspiracy. How about Greeny and Liebert and Augie? Have they agreed to talk?
You gotta be kidding. They're hardened criminals. They'll go to the grave with their mouths closed. They're not going to assist the hangman in their own execution.
Well, when will the deputies and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police come for him?
They say it as soon as possible. Probably in a week or so.
I've got to move the kid out of here and up to Sheriff Silva's jail for safekeeping.
All right. Why not do that now? And as soon as the kid is gone, I'll pull those three scumbags in from the tree.
Yes, please. I would hate for a supervisor to ride by and see them chained out there.
Well now, Winston. I'll be sure to take them some tea and cookies the first chance I get.
At Smoke's insistence, Mills sent four of his men out early the next morning, taking the kid to the county seat, to a better and more secure jail. They'd be gone at least 3 days, and possibly four. Smoke took down all the sawed-off double-barreled shotguns from the rack and passed them around.
Clean them and load them up, boys. Don't ever be too far from one.
Are you expecting trouble?
Yeah, I'm expecting trouble. From either Lee Slater or his brother.
His assumed brother. Yes, I see. They could not want the three we have here talking and implicating either of them. Now I see why you insisted on sending more men than I thought necessary to the county seat with Parsons. I thank you for your insistence, Smoke. Parsons would have been the more likely of the four to crack, as he did.
These are heavy shotgun shells. They seem too heavy for factory loads.
I had the gunsmith across the street load them for me. They're filled with broken nails and ball bearings and whatever else he had on hand. Any of you ever shot a man with a greener?
No, we haven't.
Close in, they'll cut a man in two. Makes a real mess. Fastest man in the world won't buck the odds of a sawed-off pointed at his belly.
You've shot man with these types of weapons?
You bet, Moss. I've shot men with muzzle loaders, cap and ball, Sharps 52, Navy 36, and Colt and Remington and Star 44s and 45s. I've shot them with a Remington 41 over and under. I've used knives, tomahawks, and chopping axes more than a time or two. If somebody was trying to kill me or mine, I'd drop them with a hot horseshoe if that was all I could find at the moment. Gentlemen, I just have to ask a question. You all have sidestepped it before, but level with me this time. Why in the hell did your superiors send you men out here?
Truth time.
Yes, quite. Smoke, we are all new to the West and to its customs. We're known as Tenderfeet, or so I've read. We've worked the cities and smaller eastern towns, but never west of the Mississippi. The United States Marshal's office is being upgraded in manpower, and, well, while we are not amateurs in this business, we,
Let me finish it. You were sent out here to get bloodied.
That is a reasonably accurate assessment, yes.
Smoke's attention was distracted by something out the office window.
Well, you might get that chance sooner than you think. Here comes Luddy and his whole damn crew. Shall we step outside and greet the gentlemen?
Luddy and Jake rode at the head of the column. They both gave Smoke and the Federal Marshals curt nods, then turned toward the hitch rails at the saloon. They dismounted, looped the reins, and walked into the barroom.
I don't think they liked the sight of these shotguns.
I'm sure they didn't.
Smoke sat down on the bench in front of the office. Mills sat down beside him. Moss and Winston stood nearby.
I wonder what they're up to.
A show of force, perhaps? But if so, to what purpose? We rode right up into their lair the other day. They must know that we're not going to be intimidated.
I don't know whether any of them is that smart. If I had to take a guess, I'd guess that this move is a diversion of some sort.
Yes, I agree. Luddy and his Seven Slash Bunch keeps our attention here, while the Slater gang strikes somewhere in the county. But where?
Nowhere close, you can bet on that. Around Silver Mountain, maybe. And it could be the Slater's gang is going to hit the Marshals escorting the kid. Maybe to shut the kid's mouth. Or they're coming in here to try and break their friends out of jail.
If that bunch hits my men in force, my people won't have a chance.
I just hope I've impressed upon your people to shoot first and ask questions later.
You know they won't do that.
Then if Slater and his bunch hits them, they're at best wounded, and at worst, dead meat, Mills. I keep trying to tell you people that this is the West. I don't seem to be a very good teacher. Come on.
The bunch followed Smoke up the street.
Where are you going?
It's a warm day. A mug of cool beer would taste good right about now.
Step right into the lion's den, huh?
Might as well. We did pretty well in there last time, didn't we?
I should be ashamed of myself for saying this, but we damn sure did.
I missed all the fun.
Don't count on that continuing, Moss. When we get inside, Mills and I will stay together. Moss, you take the right end of the bar. Winston, you take the left. Don't turn your back completely on these old boys. We'll see how smart Luddy is. If he tries to brace us, we'll put what's left of the bunch in jail and keep them there.
What will we do with the rest of them?
Bury them.
Smoke walked to the bar, the others right behind him. Luddy and his crew had spread out all over the table area of the saloon, and that told Smoke a lot. None of it was good.
Set up.
Yep, you're learning.
What are you two lovebirds whispering about?
You reckon they're sweet on each other, Paul?
That'd be a sight to see, wouldn't it? Them a smoochin'.
Maybe we ought to go see if they give us an advance showing.
Now that there's a right good idea, Charlie.
Now, boys, you know I can't allow nothing like that to take place. Them fellas is lawmen. They's to be respected. Besides, that's the famous Smoke Jensen yonder. He's supposed to be the fastest gun in all the West. You boys wouldn't want to brace the likes of him now, would you? I won't have no more of this now, boys. Although I'm not too sure about me giving you orders when you're on your own time. Might be some law again that. What do you say about it, Mr. Fancy Pants, you West Marshal?
I would say that you don't have any authority to give orders when your hirelings are off the job.
Hireling? Ain't it a fancy title, though?
Not really. It means anyone who will follow another's orders for money, such as a thug or a mercenary.
When he gets up, Mills, kill him.
I can't do that, Smoke.
Are you calling me a thug, city boy?
Get ready, cock that greener, Mills.
Actually, no. I was merely explaining to you the dictionary definition of a hireling. If you take exception to my remark, then you must have a low opinion of yourself.
Say what?
Charlie, I think he done insulted you. But I ain't real sure.
That remark of mine would only be taken as a blot on one's escutcheon if the party to whom it was directed was, in actuality, a thug or mercenary.
What'd he say?
Hell, don't ask me. Sounded dirty.
A blot on one's escutcheon comes from medieval times.
Smoke cut his eyes. The man had spoken from a corner table. He wore a dark suit with a white shirt and string tie. Smoke had seen him get off the stage earlier.
An escutcheon is a shield upon which a coat of arms was painted. In other words, it means a stain on one's honor.
Who the hell are you?
No one who would associate with the likes of you.
Damn, Charlie! I think the stranger done insulted you too!
Now look here. I'm getting tired of being insulted.
You could always leave.
And you could always shut your trap.
I'm right here, Charlie. Anytime you think you have the kahunas to brace me without all your buddies to back you up.
Charlie sat back down.
Yeah, well...
You just saved your own life, cowboy.
Son of a bitch.
Drink your drinks. First one of you that makes trouble, I either put you in jail or kill. Let's go, boys.
They call me Sandy. And I say, without that shotgun, you ain't nothing, Jensen.
Don't be a fool, lad. You don't have a prayer. Sit down, shut up, and live.
You don't show me nothing either, mister.
I came into town to do some gambling and some relaxing on my way to California. I have no quarrel with you, so don't crowd me, lad.
Stand up, you funny-talking bastard!
Smoke placed the man then, Earl Sutcliffe. And Earl was not a first name. He really was an Earl over in England. At least he had been until he killed a cheating man during a game of chance. The man had been a duke, which was higher than an earl, and a person of considerable power. A murder warrant had been issued for Sutcliffe, and he had fled to America. Here he had made a name for himself as a very good and very honest gambler, and one hell of a gunfighter as well.
That's Earl Sutcliffe, Sandy. Sit down and finish your beer, and there'll be no hard feelings.
Stand up, Sutcliffe!
Here now, you men, stop this immediately!
Quiet, Mills. This is none of your affair.
I say it! Stand up!
I do not wish to kill you.
You kill me, mister? You the one that's gonna die.
I don't think so. But I suppose stranger things have happened.
Sutcliffe looked to Luddy.
So, you are his employer. You could order him to stop this madness.
Sorry, Earl. Kid's on his own time today. What's the matter? You afraid of him?
One more chance, lad. Give this up.
Anytime you're ready.
Sutcliffe shot him. I mean, that kid never had a chance to clear leather. The slug took him high in the chest, slamming him back down in the chair he should have stayed in.
Sorry, lad. I tried to tell you.
I'm cold. I'm dead. Would you just look at that?
What are you seeing?
You hear that?
What are you hearing?
Nothing now. He's dead.
The seven slash men rode out shortly after Sandy died. They took the body with them to be buried on Seven Slash Range.
They'll be back tomorrow, next week, next month, but they'll be back. And when they come back, they'll do their damnedest to tear this town apart.
I concur.
That was pushed on me. I really did not want to kill the lad.
I know it. I've had 100 pushed on me.
What's going on in this town? I stopped here because it seemed so peaceful.
Smoke sat down at Sutcliffe's table.
How'd you like to be a deputy sheriff in this county?
I beg your pardon?
If you've got some time to spare, I'm authorized to pay you $50 a month as a deputy.
$50 a month? My, how could I possibly refuse such a generous offer?
There's a bedroom in the back of the jail, and you can take your meals over at Bonnie's Cafe, providing the cook isn't drunk.
Oh, I say now. And bed and board is included, too. I suppose I could spare a few weeks to lend a hand in the keeping of law and order.
We'll be facing anywhere from 50 to 75 hard cases, Earl. Maybe more than that.
Well, this sounds intriguing. You've certainly piqued my curiosity, Mr. Jensen.
Smoke.
Oh, very well. Smoke it is. Now let's take a stroll over to the livery and choose a mount for me. I'm very picky when it comes to horse flesh.
Then you'll take the job.
Indubitably.
Soon, Earl Sutcliffe was staring at the star pinned to his chest.
You find something amusing about being on the side of law and order?
Oh, I've always been on the side of law and order, providing it is good, fair, and just law and order.
And in England?
In my case, justice did not prevail.
What can I say? It happens here, too.
It will never happen again to me. Not with my six gun here.
That isn't justice.
Oh, that depends entirely upon who is giving and who is receiving now, doesn't it?
How did you...
How did an English nobleman become a gunfighter of dubious reputation in the American Wild West?
Thank you, yes.
I've always been good with cards and lucky. I soon realized that if I was going to earn my living as a gambler, I'd better learn to be more than proficient with a firearm. There are people who, when someone is winning, will always cry cheat.
And you don't cheat?
No. That is not to say I don't know how, because I certainly do. But I don't have to cheat to win. And I don't win all the time. Just enough of the time so I earn a nice income.
Well, if you already make a steady living, why...
Why am I doing this? Let's just say that there is as much Robin Hood in me as there is in Smoke Jensen. Neither one of us particularly cares for the rich who use their power to remain above the law.
Well, I can understand your feelings on this subject, but I'm not aware of any rich person who's ever wronged Smoke. Besides, Smoke is a wealthy man in his own right.
Well, so am I, Mr. Walsdorf. My home in England has 45 rooms, and my inheritance was enormous. But what does that have to do with justice?
Mills just shook his head and headed down the boardwalk.
Good Lord. Is everybody out west gun happy?
Smoke stepped out of the marshal's office.
He's a good man, Earl. And damn tough, too. He's just hooked on Eastern law enforcement. Or most probably what Eastern lawyers are teaching him.
And it's spreading, Smoke. I estimate it'll be another 10 years or so before it really makes an impact out here. But it's coming.
First time a man gives me an order telling me I can't protect what is mine with a gun, he better get ready for a showdown.
I concur.
And Mills is no spring chicken. He's been with the Marshal Service since getting out of college. Can't understand why he hasn't had some of those ideas kicked out of his head.
He's not been a field man for very long, I should imagine.
Yeah, you may be right. Well, let's get some supper and talk over some options.
Why don't we just locate the outlaws and go in shooting?
A man after my own heart. I suggested that to Mills. He says that it's not the proper way to go about bringing men to justice.
That man does have a lot to learn, doesn't he?
I just hope he stays alive long enough to learn it.
Sally Jensen was sitting in the parlor in a rocker, her arm in a sling, when Lawrence Tibson arrived. The preacher's wife, Bountiful, was sitting in the next room, but well within earshot. It just wasn't proper for a woman, especially a married woman, to receive a man alone. Besides, Bountiful didn't trust this slick-haired New York City guy anyway, all dooted up and smelling of bay rum and the like. He had something up his sleeve, and she would bet on it. Sally looked at Tibson and wondered what in the world he was doing out here in Colorado. She hadn't seen him in several years, and she'd been with her mother then, shopping in the city. She had allowed Larry to escort her to a few functions in college, well, very few, but he had never, by any stretch of the imagination, been her beau, although he would have liked to have been.
I came as soon as I heard about this terrible act of violence against you, Sally.
Thank you, Larry.
All your old college chums are very worried about you.
Worried about me? Why, for heaven's sake?
Well, my word, Sally, you've been shot. Living out here in this wild, lawless, godforsaken place, and...
And what, Larry?
Oh, nothing, Sally.
Larry.
Sally, the word is that... Well, how to say this?
Just come right out and say it, Larry. That's the way out here.
The day of the Wild West is over, Sally. It's finished. Or soon will be. Despite the play and all the articles and penny dreadfuls written about Smoke, the people back east are beginning to look upon him as a cold-blooded killer. And you are being dragged in the dirt as well.
Go on, Larry.
I know your parents are abroad and plan to stay for some time, but your brother Jordan is very upset about all this awful talk about you.
Pure flapdoodle, Larry. That's all it is. Now, exactly why did you come all the way out here from the city?
Why, to take you back where you belong, Sally.
I beg your pardon?
Sally, this is still a wild and savage land. You don't belong out here. There's no culture. Nothing that even resembles refinement. The nicer things in life. I have come to ask you to leave this place and return to the city. Not necessarily to be with me, although that is my highest aspiration. Sally, I believe once there, out of this horrible place, you will see things in a much different light. And
that's enough, Larry. Actually, that is far too much. If my husband were here, he'd throw you out of this house for saying such things. You must be insane to suggest such things.
I have only your best interests at heart, Sally.
I see. Well, I appreciate that, Larry. Now you listen to me. I am a married woman with children. I love my husband very much, and I am quite happy here on the Sugarloaf.
The what?
The Sugarloaf. That is the name of our ranch, Larry. And I intend to stay here until I die and be buried here. Is that understood?
Sally, haven't you understood a word I've said? What are you going to do when your husband is sentenced to prison?
Prison? What are you talking about, Larry?
When I left, a federal judge was contemplating issuing federal warrants for Smoke's arrest. All the wild men of the West are dead or dying, Sally. Most of the famed gunfighters and outlaws have met their just due. Very learned men in the field of crime have met and concluded that violence begets violence, and also that the poor criminal has been greatly misunderstood. They have urged President Arthur to abolish capital punishment and to set up programs to re-educate inmates and ban the carrying of guns nationwide. I fail to see anything amusing about this, Sally.
It's going to be far less amusing when somebody tells my husband he can't carry a gun, Larry. What nut came up with the idea that the poor criminal has been misunderstood?
I would hardly call Dr. Woodward a nut, Sally.
Dr. Woodward?
Yes. He's just returned from Europe, where he studied with some of the greatest doctors in the world, whose specialties include the mind.
Psychiatrists.
Why, yes. Yes, that's right.
Get out of here, Larry. Leave, now. Go on back to the city and don't come west again. This is no place for you. And don't you ever again suggest that I leave my husband. Now go, Larry.
When Larry had driven off in his rented buggy, Sally called Bountiful into the room.
Did you hear all that?
Yes, I did. I slipped out while you two were talking and sent your ranch hand Pearlie into town to tell Monte Carson. He'll get word to Smoke. Do you suppose there's anything to what he said, Sally?
Yes, I'm afraid there is.
And in conclusion, it is the belief of many knowledgeable people that the criminal should not be treated nearly so harshly as we have done in the past. The criminal is literally pushed into a life of crime due to peer pressure and his social and/or economic station in life.
Incredible.
Yes, isn't it? You see, Dr. Woodward has found that in many cases, say, a boy from the wrong side of the tracks falls in love with the daughter of a rich man. Of course, the two worlds can never meet. Well, that traumatizes the young man and leaves him feeling rejected and disillusioned and angry. If he then goes out and robs or kills, well, it isn't really his fault.
Oh, good Lord, Mills. Do you really believe that nonsense?
Nonsense, sir?
Yes, nonsense. Because that is what it is. Most people who grow up in poverty don't turn into murderers. Most do their best to work their way out of a bad economic situation. Your Dr. Woodward is simply trying to cover up for a group of very sorry, worthless, no-good people who want something for nothing and will go to any lengths to get it. And the only length they deserve is the number of feet in a hangman's rope.
Sutcliffe got up from the bench and walked into the marshal's office.
Mills make a convert out of you yet, Earl?
Hardly. The man is well-educated, but totally out of touch with reality.
Sutcliffe looked up at the rumble of a stagecoach pulling into town. Both men watched through the open door as Mills arose from his place on the bench, walked to meet the stage, and was handed a small packet of mail by the driver. The man began reading his mail as he stood there, occasionally looking across the street at Smoke's office, a startled expression on his face.
That missive he's reading concerns one of us.
Any warrants out on you?
None that I'm aware of. You?
I don't think so. However, anything is possible. I've been hearing rumors that are coming from back east. Somebody back there doesn't like me very much.
So it's true, then?
You've heard them?
Yes. I was in St. Louis just a few months ago. I spoke with a man from Chicago who asked if I knew you. I told him only by reputation. He had heard that some federal judge back east was pushing to have some warrants reissued on you. Something about a shooting that happened years ago over in Idaho.
Damn. That was back in 73. I wasn't more than a kid when I helped destroy the town of Bury and killed Richards, Potter, and Stratton. They were the men who helped kill my brother and my father, and who hired the men who raped and killed my first wife. and killed our baby son.
Then they certainly deserved killing. Tell me, those three you mentioned, did either of them have any relative or family friend in a position of power back east?
Not that I know of, but it could be. But there were no warrants issued from that shooting, I'm certain of that. And I know damn well I left those men dead.
Well, somebody has an axe to grind with you. And from the look on Mills' face, he isn't too happy with the letters he just received. Want to wager as to the identity of the party mentioned in those missives?
No bet. But he's a pretty straightforward type of fellow. If they're about me, he'll tell me.
They watched as Mills called over to Winston and Moss and showed them the documents. The men read the letters and shook their heads. Mills folded the letters and tucked them in an inside pocket of his jacket. The three of them then walked across the street and entered the office.
Smoke, we need to talk.
You look like you just swallowed a green persimmon, Mills. What's the matter?
It isn't good news, Smoke. A federal judge in Washington is just about to put his signature to warrants. The murder warrant, Smoke. On you. Three of them.
And the names of the men I'm supposed to have killed?
Potter, Richards, and Stratton.
I killed them for a fact. Over in Idaho years ago. But it was a stand-up fair fight. Me against the three of them.
Smoke recounted the incident for Mills and the other marshals.
Richards' brother. Has to be. The judge's name is also Richards.
Well then, he's just as sorry as his damn brother was. And I'll tell you this, Mills. No man will ever put handcuffs on me. No man.
Smoke.
No man, Mills. That was a fair fight. And Judge Richards can go straight to hell and take his warrants with him.
What if I'm ordered to arrest you?
Tell him you can't find me. Ignore the order. Quit your job, but don't try to put cuffs on me. The warrants are bogus, Mills. It's a made-up charge. There were dozens of people who witnessed that fight from the hillside around the town. Don't force my hand, Mills. It's not worth your life, or any other lawman's life.
You draw on me, Smoke?
If you force me to do it. Lord knows I don't want to drag iron against you or any lawman for that matter. But I won't be arrested for something I didn't do.
Smoke, the Marshal's Service knows you're here. If Judge Richard signs those warrants, I will have no choice but to place you under arrest.
We all have our choices, Mills. We all come to crossroads in our lives. Sometimes the legal road is not the right road.
And you, Earl?
I stand by Smoke. I've talked to too many people who were at that fight in the ghost town. It was exactly as Smoke called it. I can have a dozen of the West's most famed gunslicks in here in a week, all to stand by Smoke Jensen. If you want a bloodbath, just try to arrest Jensen.
I don't know what to do. Come on, man.
Mills and his marshals left the office.
Goddamn political appointees. Your government is becoming like the one I left across the waters, out of control. What are you going to do if the judge signs those warrants?
I damn sure won't be placed under arrest. I'll write a friend of mine up in Denver. He's a federal judge. I'll ask him to look into the matter. I'll ask him to block those warrants until a complete investigation is done into the matter. I'll take the legal course now. But if that road dead ends...
A few days later, the stagecoach ran and Smoke had mail. He tore open the envelope and quickly scanned the contents. Sheriff Monte Carson of Big Rock wrote that he now had flyers from the United States government proclaiming Smoke Jensen to be an outlaw and a murderer. There was a $10,000 price on his head. Events were moving very fast, and he advised Smoke to haul his ashes out of there until this matter could be resolved. Smoke showed the letter to Earl.
I'll go with you.
No thanks. I'd appreciate it if you stay on here as Marshal and Deputy Sheriff. Mills is going to need help with the outlaws.
The system is turning against you, and yet you still have law and order in your heart. I don't know that I could feel so magnanimous towards such a system.
Without some form of law, the country would revert to anarchy, Earl. I'll head to the high country and wait until things straighten out. I've got some good people working on my behalf.
I'll go purchase a few things for you at the store and arrange for a pack horse. I'll have things ready to go in an hour. Did Mills receive any mail this run?
Smoke smiled and handed Earl a letter from the U.S. Marshal's office in Washington, D.C.
I told the driver I'd see that Mills got this. Next time the stage runs, Give this to him.
I don't believe that delay will disappoint Mr. Walsdorf one bit.
I may be on the run, but I'm going to see if I can't harass Luddy Charles and the Slater gang while I'm dodging the law.
A one-man wrecking crew?
I've done it before.
You'll stay in the area?
Yeah. I'll check back with you from time to time. If the town fills with U.S. Marshals, tie a piece of black cloth on the bridge railing north of town. I'll know what it means.
Count on it.
Take care of my little dog for me too, will you, Earl?
I certainly shall.
I anticipated this, so I moved my gear out of the hotel yesterday and stowed it in the shed out back.
I'll go get you provisioned.
Smoke sat down behind the desk and cleaned his .44s and his rifle. Filled a pouch full of shotgun shells and cleaned a greener. He then went out back to the shed. There, he checked on the bag of dynamite that he'd bought along the trail coming here and carefully inspected his fuses and caps, then placed them in a waterproof pouch and rewrapped the bags in canvas. He checked his clothing and his saddlebags and found that they had not been disturbed. The same with his bedroll and ground sheet. Then he went back into the office and picked up the little dog, petting it.
Now you behave yourself now. Mind Earl, you hear?
The little dog wriggled and squirmed and licked Smoke's hand, and he smiled at its antics.
You're all set. The food should last 5 or 6 days if you're careful. I put half a dozen boxes of 44s in the pack for you.
I'll pull out now, then. Lead the back way. Take care of yourself, Earl.
And you take care of yourself, friend. I advise the livery man to get lost for a few minutes. You should have no trouble.
Smoke slipped out the back, picked up his gear from the shed, and made his way to the livery stable. There he tossed a saddle on Buck and stowed his gear on a pack horse, one of the strongest and best-looking pack animals he'd ever seen. Then he led both horses out the back.
You ready to go head hunting, Buck? You better hunt you a hole, Judge Richards, because when this is over, I'm coming after you. I'm gonna stomp your guts into a greasy puddle. And that's a promise.
Smoke made his first night's camp just off the Continental Divide Trail. After breakfast the next morning, he picketed the pack animal in the deep woods near plenty of water and graze. Then he saddled Buck. He climbed higher, staying in the thickest timber and brush he could find and letting Buck pick his way. Finally, he came to a halt on a ridge that offered a spectacular view for miles around in all directions. Smoke took field glasses from his saddlebag and began carefully scanning the area. His sweep paid off after only a few minutes. He knew where the mining camps were and where the few homesteaders lived. This was not a country for much farming other than small gardens. He discounted them.
Well, Buck, looks like it's time to be sociable and do some calling on folks. Yeah.
Two hours later, Smoke picketed Buck and hung his spurs on the saddle horn. Taking his rifle, he began making his way through the timber, carefully and silently working his way closer to what he figured was an outlaw camp. He bellied down in thick underbrush when he got within earshot of the mangy-looking bunch of hard cases.
I'm getting tired of this sitting around doing nothing. I say we go find us some homesteaders with kids and have our way with the girls.
Yeah, nice young tender girlies. I like to hear them squall. I like to whoop up on them, too. I like it when they fight.
Or maybe we could find us a fella to use as target practice. Kill them slow. That's good fun.
Nah, Slater says we got to wait. They gonna be shipping out gold and silver in a few days, and we wait until then.
Come on. Let's hit the town. We're running out of grub. Besides, there's women in that little town. I see me a big fat one. I like fat women. More to whoop up on when they's fat.
Whoa! Goddamn!
Smoke shot the man in the center of the chest and he dropped like a rag doll into the campfire, his clothing igniting in seconds. Smoke shifted positions as the outlaws fell into cover and began slinging lead in his direction. He rolled for several yards and then belly crawled a dozen more yards, coming up behind a huge old fallen log.
Somebody pull Daly out of that fire! He's stinking up everything!
You pull him out!
You go to hell! I ramrod this outfit and you do what I tell you to do!
Go ramrod it up your ass!
Smoke waited, his Winchester 44 ready. He caught a glimpse of a sleeve of a checkered shirt and lined it up. The man rolled on the ground, a bullet-shattered arm hanging useless. A smile of grim satisfaction on his lips, Smoke began working his way back, not wanting to risk any further shots. If he waited much longer, the hunter would soon become the hunted. Smoke took off in search of a hole.
Damn it, Earl! This is tampering with the mail! That is against the law!
I didn't tamper with anything. The driver handed Smoke the mail, and Smoke told me to give this to you. I gave it to you.
You assisted him in getting away!
As far as I knew, he was a free man. He could leave any time he chose. He chose to leave.
Damnation!
Mills stormed to the door. The men who had escorted the prisoner up to the county seat had returned.
You men! Saddle up! I'm authorizing you to find and arrest Smoke Jensen.
The marshals all looked at one another. Now, going after outlaws was one thing. Tangling with Smoke Jensen was quite another matter. A trio of deputy sheriffs come to fetch one of the prisoners in jail, exchanged wary glances, then addressed the young marshals.
You boys are gonna do what?
We're going to arrest Smoke Jensen.
What the hell for?
Federal warrants. By the powers vested in me by the United States government, I am hereby deputizing you men as deputy U.S. Marshals. The prisoners can remain in jail. You will accompany us in pursuit and arrest of Smoke Jensen.
You can go right straight to hell, too. I ain't got nothing against Smoke Jensen.
Me neither.
The third deputy nodded adamantly.
You men do not seem to understand the gravity of this situation.
I understand this. You go after Smoke Jensen, you're gonna come back, if you come back at all, across your saddle.
Yeah. If I was you, I'd sit on that warrant for a time. I'll wager that ain't worth the paper it's written on.
You best leave Smoke alone. That old boy was born with the bark gone and was raised up by mountain men and Injuns. These tribes all over the West sing songs about how ferocious Jensen is. Besides, you ever heard of gunslingers named Charlie Starr and Monte Carson and Louis Longmont and Johnny North and Cotton Pickens and...
Of course I've heard of them. What's that got to do with anything?
Man, how'd you like to see them old boys and 30 more just as Randy come a-fogging in here, reins in their teeth and hands full of colts, all of them mad as hell at you?
That would not be a pleasant sight.
Pleasant sight? You couldn't see nothing like it this side of hell. Now, you just pull in your horns and give that warrant time to rest, Mr. U.S. Marshal. Things will work out. You just keep your nose out of Smoke Jensen's business. That way, you'll stay alive.
That's right.
I have got a job to do, gentlemen.
Uh-huh. So do we. But sometimes you got to let common sense take over. Smoke's killed a lot of sorry old boys in his time, but he ain't no back-shooting murderer. All them he put in the ground was either stand-up fair fights, and he's usually facing two or three at a time, or punks that was after him and he waylaid them to shorten the odds.
You think about that warrant, mister. You think a long time about it. The longer you think, the longer you got to live.